The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Last hour, best hour here on A Numbers Game powered by VSiN. Excited to have you here in downtown Las Vegas. Jared Smith, Kelly Bidlin with us here for the next hour. Very good hour booked by my counterpart. In about 30 minutes, Chris Felica, you know him from Fox Sports, the Bear, is going to hop on with us, talk all things college football. Amin El-Hassan, Charlotte Wilder of the Oddball podcast. I haven't caught it yet, but I'm going to listen to it after I have a chance to chat with them, because I always like to follow up with people after I interview them for the first time. And I will make my debut listening to the Oddball podcast to hear some NBA chatter from our friends over at the DraftKings Network, but they will be on with us live on set. We have two, that's very rare, back-to-back on-set guests in this hour. Again, Kelly is flexing his producer muscle. I'm about halfway through the coffee. I told you I'll finish it before the end of the show. We're halfway through the show. That's usually how it works here. But let's take a quick break, go across the pond, and talk a little golf. And Kelly, you have been hard at work along with the rest of the Long Shots team, getting yourself ready for the final. This is the final major of the year, right? We've already had three. Final major of the year.
PGA is early now. Yep.
Yeah, they kind of swapped it around on us. Yeah, PGA used to be in August. We used to have, you know, April, June. I think May was the off month. Now they moved the PGA up, so now it's all kind of condensed in that very short period of time. So this is the final major of the year. Golf season, I guess, goes by quicker and quicker every year. I don't even remember the Masters at this point, and we're already on to the Open.
You got we've just done a little bit of the schedule change now, so we'll have the Open here this week, and then they're going to come back, and we'll get into the FedEx Cup playoffs.
How do you feel about the FedEx Cup? Are you a fan of it?
Meh, it's okay. Hey, look, I think it's always
the format's unique.
It's always great when we can get any tournament with kind of all the best golfers to make sure they're there. So that part of it's good.
Fair.
They've tinkered with the format the years. I don't know if that they've perfected it ever. But you know what? It's a fun way to at least end the season if you're still going to play tournaments after majors, right?
So we talked to Sina Jad a little earlier in the show. It seems like you guys are in cahoots on Morikawa.
Yeah.
Were there any other crossovers on your card, or do you want to take this in a different direction?
Yeah, no, that's a good call. Let's start there, because there were a couple. Aaron Rye, I do like this week as well. I've been betting him heavily. He's had a heck of a year, really been able to find the putter here this season, and that has really turned his game around. He's another guy. I believe he said this about Corey Connors, but I'll say it about Aaron Rye, where he's a little called Morikawa light. You're talking about the two most accurate guys off the tee this week, and I think that's going to matter big time in this tournament, Jared. We're playing with really tight fairways, really small greens, so you need guys that are going to be really accurate off the tee. Distance control is going to be fascinating this week as well. Off the tee game is really, really important. You don't really need bombers necessarily this week, but there's going to be a lot of tests off the tee of, okay, do I go short of this bunker that's in the middle of the dang fairway or a railroad track in one instance, or do I need to try to get it over that, set up a little bit shorter shot on my approach? A lot of those guys are going to be challenged with that. That's what practice rounds. They're all trying to figure that out this week. But accuracy is going to be key, because if you're off out of the fairway, as we often see with opens, one of two things. Either you got massive fairways to play with, and it's not usually an issue, or you're getting into, you know, waist-high grass, and that's basically what's going to happen with some of these guys if they don't find the fairway. So accuracy, if you're handicapping at home and breaking down all these guys yourself, accuracy off the tee, really important this week. Approach is important every single week. When you get these really small greens, though, Jared, and if we have any weather, it's going to be windy, and I'll update that in a second, around the green play becomes even more important. And a lot of people are asking me kind of throughout this week, as bad weather looks like it's going to hit throughout the weekend, you know, how do you adjust things? All I'm kind of doing is just increasing how much I'm weighing around the green game, because with small greens already, they're already tough to hit. If wind starts blowing, they're going to become even tougher to hit. So you need those guys that are creative and kind of wizards around the green. I haven't played Hideki Matsuyama yet, but he might be an ad
that
for me.
Sounds like
that.
A name that I would be interested in this week. Again, I don't have the data that you do. I have some context of what I watch and what I know. And sometimes when you say certain names, I'm like, yeah, that guy's probably going to do well in this tournament.
He's just struggled a little bit with his accuracy off the tee this year.
I don't have that kind of context, but like his game probably suits it.
Yes, it should. And he's been a guy that I've burned some money on this year for sure. So I might go back to him one more time. But yeah, I'll finish up. So Aaron Rye, I love him this week. I mean, he's on a heater right now. T4 at the Scottish Open, T7 at the John Deere before that, T2 at the Rocket Mortgage, T19 U.S. Open, T14 Canadian Open. He's playing some of the best golf of his career right now. Open history, missed a cut in 2022, T19 in 2021, so has played well. He is an Englishman. So he's kind of got everything that I'm looking for here. Win equity's not as high on him, especially in a field like this. So I did play him just in the top 20, and then in a matchup over Matt Fitzpatrick, another Englishman who's just not quite playing quite as well right now. So did match with Sia there. And then the other one he brought up was Akshay Bhatia. I'm on for a long shot as well. This is kind of a more of a feel play where this guy, he's young, 22, I believe right now, Jared. He's going to be a big deal on the PGA Tour for years to come, and his game should fit this course well. It's just, is the experience going to, you know, be an issue? Yeah, probably. I think he's a fun flyer, though. If you want to look for an outright that's a true long shot, you're going to get triple digits on that. I got 125-1. You're going to find him in that 100-1 range. And, you know, I'm probably going to do it today, back it up with a small top 5 or top 10. You don't want to get a guy that close and then miss out completely on making any money. So those were the ones I believed we matched on. I will say he's on Patrick Cantlay this week. I am fading him in one matchup. I love Tony Finau this week. Okay. I really, really love Finau, and Cantlay happened to be on the other side.
How did he do at the U.S. Open?
At the U.S. Open, Tony Finau.
Because I think I was on Finau, too, in the Open. I was on Finau in the U.S. Open, and I remember I was very excited about that bet for pretty much most of the week.
Yeah, he was up there. So this is another guy where he kind of checks all the boxes. When you think of Open Championships and you think of links-style golf, you don't necessarily think of Tony Finau being the perfect fit, but where his Open history, okay, missed a cut last year. T28 in 2022, T15 in 2021, third the year before that, T9 the year before that, T27 the year before that, T18 before that, the year before that. So he has a history, and we used to call him top 20 Tony all the time, or top 10 Tony all the time, because he could never win some of these tournaments, but he's been in that range for so much of his Open career.
Yeah.
So he's got that. And then, as you bring up, just his recent form is great. T5 at the Travelers. Hasn't teed it up since the Travelers. One thing to keep an eye on. But a lot of these guys that are vets, I respect that they're approaching the tournament the right way, the way they feel is best for them, right? So there's been a lot of questions about Scottie Scheffler with that this week. He's approaching this the best way he knows how. But Finau, T5 of the Travelers, T3 of the U.S. Open, T8 the Memorial, T17 of the Charles Schwab, T18 of the PGA, playing great golf right now. Last 12 rounds of the PGA Tour, he's third on approach in this field, third in par 5 scoring, which I think is going to be key this week. 3 par 5s out there you got to be able to score on. 2nd in bogey avoidance, 4th in scrambling, 5th in around the green play, and 26th with the putter. So he's really checking all the boxes for me. I'm loaded up on Tony a bit this week. I got him in an outright at 45-1, top 20 pretty heavily there, and then in a couple matchups over Minwoo Lee and Patrick Cantlay. Then see a couple others real quick. John Rahm, Sung JM. John Rahm, this is basically just a price play for me. We're out to 25, 26 to 1.
I was looking at Rahm, and I'm like, that number seems weird.
It's long. Jared, he went over to LIV, so he's kind of been out of sight, out of mind. He hasn't won on LIV.
How do you feel about the LIV guys this week?
I think there's some interesting prices.
Because they didn't play in the Scottish Open, right?
Correct.
So they didn't have that, like, warm-up.
Yeah, they had an event last week, though.
In Nashville, right?
No, they were over in down in Spain.
They were in Europe.
They did have a big-time event, actually, last week. So they had a pretty big tune-up as well. It was smart of LIV to do that, in my opinion. But John Rahm, he hasn't won yet on LIV, but he also hasn't finished outside of the top 10. And he's kind of been, the past couple events, he keeps gaining strokes everywhere. So at this price, it's not one I could avoid. As you can see on my card, I didn't really load it. It's not like I backed it up with a top 20 or played him in any matchups or anything. There's a chance he shows up and is a bit of a dud, as he's kind of been in the majors so far this year. But, man, it's hard for me to picture a year going by without John Rahm being a factor in one of the majors. And at 25-1 worth a bet, just to answer your question, man, I think Brooks Koepka, if you wanted to say the same thing to me about Brooks, I'm fine with that. You want to play Brooks Koepka at 40-1? Right ahead. Brooks Koepka, we see what he's like. We've seen him over the course of his career, how he plays in majors, and I'm not going to count that guy out ever. And at a price of 40-1, I don't hate that. Bryson DeChambeau, I did play Colin Morikawa in a matchup against him. I'm not necessarily running to fade DeChambeau, but at the same time, I don't think this course is as great as a setup for him as he'd ideally like. He's still, I mean, like, if I had my power rankings for the week, Bryson's still probably in that top 10, right around that range. But I think there are some guys at the top of the board I'm feeling more comfortable with. And at a minus 132 price on Morikawa, that was a pretty easy tournament matchup for me.
Yeah, it feels like Bryson's a good fade this week.
Yeah, I think just as long as you're confident on the other side, right? Yeah. That's always tournament matchups are the best way to bet golf, but it's what's the problem? You don't get to create them. You know what I mean? You've got to. I'm still waiting for that.
That's a really interesting create a bet. I'll give you another name that we've heard a lot of that hasn't won a major yet, but he is in a market that I'm intrigued in.
Okay.
Top debutant, Mr. Åberg, Ludvig Åberg.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a, what is the price on him?
2-1, basically, to be the top. He's now Akshay Bhatia.
Bhatia
is also in there, 8-1. And I think he's eating up some equity. But let's just leave
it
at this.
That's a good price on Ludvig.
Åberg is 20. He's like the fourth favorite to win the tournament.
Yeah. He's had problems on Sunday's closing, man, but his game is great. And the odds makers are putting him right there for a reason, Jared. Like, they don't want to get beat up too bad on this guy before he becomes a superstar.
You don't need him to win the tournament. Just
2-1. That's a good bet.
Finish ahead of all the other people who've never played in an Open Championship before. Love this event. I'm definitely going to be tweeting out some picks later tonight. The first tee off is at like 10 o'clock Pacific time.
That's right.
Crazy stuff. College football on the other side. We are so close to football season here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, we are back here on A Numbers Game. And hey, check it out, early bird special. You can win big with our VSiN Pro subscription this year. That early bird price, $175, gets you full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl. What will you get with said access? Well, funny you ask. Daily best bets, exclusive betting splits, which is probably the most popular page on the site. I think it is, actually, the most popular page on the site. Really, it pays for itself right there with just the splits. But you also get betting systems, analysis from pro cappers. You get 24/7 video content and all of our special edition betting guides. The NFL betting guide is out now. I have not started reading it yet. First, I have college football to get to, which we will get to in a minute. Then the NFL betting guide is next up on the docket. With that guide, you also get packed detailed team division conference analysis, plus season win totals, futures, props, and awards, best bets. Don't wait. Sign up for now. Sign up now before the end of July. You get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl for that discounted price of $175. That is VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, it's time to take a big U-turn here on the show. I'm Jared Smith in for Gil Alexander today. Kelly Bidlin here with us as well. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Chris Felica from Fox Sports, the Bear, is going to hop on and talk a little college football. I will follow up with him on some of the things we are going to discuss now, which is the SEC. We love the SEC around these parts, right? Everybody loves the SEC. It's the best conference in America. It's the conference of now what? Like, they've basically stripped like 7 different conferences of all of their kyber crystals, and now they've combined them into this super conference with Texas and Oklahoma joining.
We were discussing in the back before the show. What are we? We're up to 16 schools in the SEC,
16
right?
16 schools. So
what is the Big Ten now? 20?
It's the Big 20 now.
Big 20. Yeah.
The way that I view conferences is kind of the way that I view like 1984, like the old book.
Sure.
Like, we're in Big Brother mode now, where in reality, there's just this like overarching like mega conference that I think is on the horizon. We're just not there yet. I think we need 2 mega conferences, and I'm gonna ask Bear about this in our next segment. I think 2 conferences, like American League, National League, and like relegation, where you can get into and be voted off the island.
How are we split
every
up
year?
Just geographically? Something that
I
makes sense?
I think geographically makes sense. I'm open to...
So like Stanford isn't flying to the East Coast every other week?
That doesn't bother me as much. Like the travel to me is not as important because these guys all traveled. It's all chartered planes. Like even when I worked for FAU, we got a private charter mm-hmm. plane. And that was FAU back in the 2015 time before, you know, before the new stadium, before the
styling.
I was with Kang and out with Ken LaVica. Actually, I called one football game with Ken LaVica. It was this is the only reason that I know what the travel is like, because I actually got on a plane and went to Monroe, Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
To go call the Monroe Warhawks against the Florida Atlantic Owls. I think this was the 2012 or 2013 season. I forget the exact year. Things get a little blurry before that 2020 time. Like 2020, it's like there's a separation. But the SEC to me is obviously a very different handicap this year. I think the two teams that stand out to me the most in terms of, okay, who's going to be affected the most? Obviously, it's Texas and Oklahoma. But I think some of the other teams in the conferences are going to be affected by the different landscape we are now dealing with. Let's start with Texas. Let's go to Texas. Let's check out their win total, which is right now sitting at 10.5. I'd be interested if you guys could put Texas's schedule on the screen. It's kind of where the analysis is intriguing to me. Because I think if you do have a win total, which right now is set at 10.5. Again, do the math. They play 12 games in the season. The win total, now you're getting plus money to the over, so you're getting a little bit of juice there if you want to go over. But you're talking about a team that has a week 2 game at the Big House. And if they lose that game, that's the only game they can lose for the rest of the year. And they got to run the table if you want to go 11-1 and hit this win total to the over. Now, it's not the most daunting schedule in the SEC. They don't have to play Alabama, which is fortunate, but they have to play Georgia at home.
Yeah, so get them at home. I
like you're it. Talking about two teams that are perennial playoff teams on your schedule. Now, one of them's at home, but still, Michigan and Georgia are about as good as it gets in college football, and you've got to beat them both or else you're not going over this win total. If you lose both of those games, there's 10 wins right there, and that's your max. So I think I would be very hesitant to go over on Texas this year. Now, I do like the quarterback situation. I think that's obviously their biggest strength. They have not one but two that you would consider upper echelon quarterbacks. I'm assuming Ewer starts and Arch will probably be, you know, sniffing right on his heels the whole season if he does falter. I think the offensive line's really good, too.
How comfortable is that going to be?
It's not.
I mean, Ewer's was great last year. And it's
not going to be comfortable at all.
People are going to be calling for Arch as soon as he throws one interception.
If he struggles that game at Michigan, that we're going to hear it. Let's leave it at this. He better play well at Colorado State. Yeah. He better play well at that opener. I think they will. I really like the offensive line for Texas. I do think that's why they're going to be a really positive team this year. Kelvin Banks is probably an NFL starting left tackle at some point in his future. I think the 1-2 punch of Blue and Baxter in the backfield are going to combine for over 1,500 yards. I think there's a lot of talent here, as you would expect with Texas. The defense is where I think the biggest hope is. I love Kwiatkowski, but they brought in the defensive coordinator from Arizona, Johnny Nansen. So it's going to be kind of a co-DC scenario. I'm interested to see how that plays out. Kwiatkowski, to me, has all the experience, but Nansen, really good job at Arizona last year. You take Arizona, they're top five defense in the Pac-12 last year. Really impressive. The secondary, to me, is the biggest weakness defensively. Terrence Brooks goes to Duke. You don't see that too often, transfer from Texas to Duke in football, but that's what happened.
Yeah, not really.
And they allowed over 280 passing yards 6 games last year. So I think the defense for Texas, that's why they brought in Nansen. I think that needs to be the focus this year because you have a different schedule, different calendar. Everything is different this year for Texas. Now, you do play Oklahoma. That's similar. But everything else this year is different. So how they handle the rigors of the SEC, I think, is the biggest question with this handicap. I can't project how they're going to feel on October 19th against Georgia after facing Mississippi State. Now, I think it's not going to be as severe in that game against Georgia. My guess is the SEC rigors really start to rear its ugly head in November at Arkansas. Fayetteville's not an easy place to play. I don't think Arkansas is very good, but Fayetteville's not an easy place to play. Then you get that game on November 30th against Texas A&M, the last game of the year, and I think that place, College Station, is always rocking, but now you get an in-state conference rivalry between Texas and Texas A&M. Used to be a conference rivalry in the Big 12. Fun, yeah. Now it's another conference rivalry again in the SEC. Like, I feel like I feel like this is a really tough schedule to even consider an over.
Yeah, it really is. I think that makes a lot of sense. You're right. I mean, you are. I mean, you've got two games to play with. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Yeah. You lose one of those early, it is going to be tough for you to escape with this over.
The other team that intrigues me,
like -170. I don't want to say only, but it's. I mean, the way you just broke it down, which I thought was good. I mean, only -170 feels pretty light.
Feels very light because they're definitely. There might be game of the year lines up actually for that Michigan game and the Georgia game. I would be willing to bet they're a slight dog at Michigan, and they're a slight dog at home against Georgia. Maybe that game's a pick'em. Maybe that game's a pick'em because Georgia's a little bit. Actually, no, I don't think Georgia's down. I don't think Georgia's down at all. Carson Beck year
Georgia,
two.
Georgia 2-point favorite.
So they're a home favorite to Georgia. I would probably take some action on Georgia there because. If Texas loses that game to Michigan, they won't be favored in that game against Georgia. That's my initial gut. But you're not going to get a ton of movement there over the next few months. In fact, I would be willing to wait on that one because I don't think that game's going to get a ton of action anyway.
Texas, 3.5-point road favorite against Michigan.
Yeah, I would not bet that. I would not bet that. I guess they're really expecting Michigan to take a step back.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
I tell you what, the Big House is going to be rocking for that game. All right, another team that intrigues me this year is Tennessee. Tennessee's win total set at 9.5. And I'll be honest, this feels like an under, too. And the reason why is they have two Power 5 non-conference road games. They play NC State in Charlotte. I know that's not a true road game, but let's be honest. That's a road game. And then they go to Oklahoma. And this is a Tennessee team that doesn't play the SEC or Oklahoma in the SEC. So that is a new environment for them. That is a new road trip for them. The NC State game, they'll be favored in that game, but let's be honest, it's a Power 5 non-conference true road game. You don't see that too often with teams in the SEC. I give a lot of credit to Tennessee for scheduling that game. The rest of the schedule, I think, is also kind of up and down. Game at Oklahoma and Norman early in the year. Like, they could legitimately start 2-2. And then you go to Arkansas, which again, I think is a win. The rivalry game at Florida, that one's always tight. Then you have to play Bama and go to Georgia. So three losses, you're cooked if you're betting an over here. And you're seeing there on your screen 8.5 with heavy juice to the over. I've seen some 9.5s. I think over 8.5, I would be more intrigued. But do I want to lay 70 cents for a team that has to go to Georgia, play Alabama, go to NC State or Charlotte, and go to Norman? I mean, those are four very difficult games, and you've got to win at least three of them, or else 9-3, you're kind of sitting up against it. I think the SEC win totals this year, I think you're going to see a lot of unders across the board. We'll get Chris Felica's thoughts on the other side. The Bear joins us next. College football is the rage here on A Numbers Game. Stay with us.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, we are back on A Numbers Game live from downtown Las Vegas. Jared Smith, Kelly Bidlin, and joining us in studio. This is a thrill. We get him here. I know you've been in town for the last
a couple of days,
and usually that's the end of the Vegas bender there. when you're ready to go home. This is Chris Felica, of course, of Fox Sports. Does a fantastic job not only covering college football, but very busy soccer summer for you as well, sir.
It's been a while. I was in LA. I was in LA for 5 weeks for the soccer. Came here for a couple of days to enter Circus Survivor and some other contests as well. Met up with my man Tom from Vegas Football Proxy, took care of me. And then I got to go back to L.A. Tomorrow for our annual football meetings. So it was kind of silly to fly home to Connecticut just to stay home for a day and then fly back here to go to the meeting. So I was able just to come here, knock out
take a nice exactly. little. You take a nice little siesta
exactly.
in Vegas for a couple days. See a couple guys about a couple things. Get the business end of the spectrum. It is always interesting. We get these meccas to Vegas in the August, late July, early August months because the contests, and you were talking about Circa, but all over town. it is like, I think it's like a rat race. Like, it feels like New York City commuting, getting everywhere. Like, there's like a week in August where like everyone comes and just signs up for the contest. And it's like one of the busiest weeks of the year where there's like nothing going on except for preseason NFL and people signing up for contests. So I'm glad you could take advantage of that. All right, let's get to college football because it's such a different year. You have expanded playoffs. You have SEC adding teams. You have Pac-12 turning into the Pac-2 and kind of evolving or devolving into whatever they're going to turn into. There's a lot of upheaval. But when there is upheaval, sometimes the markets kind of miss some things.
Yeah.
Is there something specific that you're looking at? We were discussing maybe to make the playoff or the division odds in the in each conference. It is a unique year in the futures market because of all the moving parts.
Yeah, I think especially if you look in the Big 12, first of all, I think I would look at like the compare the odds to make the playoff compared with odds to win the Big 12, because I don't think the Big 12 is getting multiple teams in.
Nope.
So see whatever team you may like and take the longer of the two price if there is a difference. Maybe they've caught on and have priced it accordingly, but maybe the odds to make the playoff are longer than they are to win the conference. So that would be something to play. And I don't know with the bigger conferences and these big name teams if they have caught on to, like, there's a chance. I mean, basically, for Ohio State or Georgia not to make the playoff, they're probably going to finish lower than third.
Yeah.
And that's probably not going to happen. So, like, I don't know if like these prices to make the playoff on some of these big name contenders are long enough yet.
Yeah. And it is interesting because a lot of these books, you can parlay futures prices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is becoming a very popular way to play futures, especially if you can space it out by season. But if you can parlay teams to make the playoff and take, let's say, an Ohio State, which is basically a $6 favorite, Georgia's a $5 favorite to make the playoff, in order for those teams not to make the playoff, it has to be a disaster of a season. And if you could take a minus 650, minus 550, and shorten those odds and get yourself in a good spot, you can play off of that as we get later in the year, because one game is going to determine it. So once you get to the end of the year, odds are one game is going to determine yay or nay making it to the playoffs. And then if you've got a nice ticket in your hand in your back pocket you've been sitting on all year, you can find some ways to find some value.
And the way these rankings take place, what the committee look at, like, even if Georgia were to lose their three games that they have, what, Alabama, Texas, and Ole Miss, like, 9-3, Georgia, SEC beat everybody else, like, they're still going to be right there on the – right on the edge, and they probably won't lose all three of them, but it's going to take that in order for them not to make the playoff. In Ohio State, they got the game at Oregon, they got the Michigan game, they got Penn State, but like, they're not going to lose all three of those. So I don't know. That's just something if you have no issue throwing a couple teams together in a parlay and laying a number like that, I think that's a good investment.
I think the SEC and the Big Ten are the two conferences that I'm most intrigued to see what the vibe is.
Mm-hmm.
New travel, that is, and as someone who travels all the time, that is important because these teams, the programs, the recruits, they're all used to going through a certain routine. And now you throw that routine off, especially the coaching and the scouting. There are going to be some wild upsets, I think, this year when you have these Oregons going across the country, vice versa going west, east going west, west going east. It feels like chaos. It always feels like chaos, but this year I think it's going to be ratcheted up to another degree.
And I think as well, if you look at the new teams to the SEC, the Texas and Oklahoma, yes, Texas went to Bryant Denny and won last year and Alabama, but they're going to have to back that up now with another – it's not like they're going to be playing
– any random Big 12 team.
Exactly. They're not going to be playing Cincinnati the week or whoever
BYU.
It was.
BYU.
Exactly. Like they're going to be playing another, like, legit difficult team. Like, even a team like Mississippi State or Arkansas, who are two of the lower expected win total teams in the SEC. Like, that's not a gimme. I don't know who Texas plays after some of their big games this year, but it's not – and people who are, like, not SEC folk, here you go again, but waxing poetic and preaching about the SEC. But it is different, the quality of those teams. So, look, Texas has recruited great lately, and maybe they are up to snuff to be able to do that. Oklahoma, I'd be a little worried, but I think Oklahoma is still a little young. They might be a year away with Arnold and some of the good recruiting classes that they've had the last couple of years.
And I'm not fully sold on Venables yet as a head coach. I think as a defensive coordinator, he's fantastic. But when you make that ascension to the head coaching spot, there's a lot of wrinkles to iron out. Speaking of that, I was watching a segment this morning, SEC Media Day, and I saw – Kalen DeBoer. Actually, he's on the screen right now.
There he is.
Kalen DeBoer, Alabama head coach.
It's weird.
Man, that looks
weird.
That looks weird, right? Like, it's going to be an adjustment not only for Alabama, but I think just college football in general getting used to a very different regime in Tuscaloosa.
And that's going to be the biggest, one of the bigger questions. It's funny, you just see Nick Saban on with Feinbaum, and he doesn't have the little Alabama pin on his lapel either. Like, that's another different thing. But I think if you look at, I lost my train of thought.
Still has his office though in the house. There,
he does.
Tuscaloosa.
He does.
He looks good. He looks happy. He does look great.
But I think that's going to be the thing. Like Alabama, we saw what Alabama was before Nick Saban got there and struggled for a really long time between Gene Stallings and Nick, and there were so many different coaches. Like, what was Alabama truly just the Nick Saban dynasty, or is Alabama back to being what they were under other coaches? Is that's going to be the interesting thing, because this guy has won everywhere he's been, hasn't necessarily had the best talent wherever he's been, but he wins games as underdogs. Like, you saw them beat Oregon a couple times last year. You saw them get in the playoff in Paul, an episode over Texas. This guy can coach. And I wouldn't be betting against him to put up another 9 or 10 win season this year.
The Big Ten is always close to my heart. Penn State alum. We had a chance to talk about Penn State a little bit when you hopped on earlier this summer. I'm still in the same boat with them, but the rest of the Big Ten to me is intriguing, because you get this now divide where you have USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington, all these teams kind of going across the country here. Is there one of those newcomers that you feel really strongly about? Obviously, Oregon's the low-hanging fruit, but do you think that maybe – I guess that's a great way to focus on it. Dan Lanning, I think, is a fantastic coach. Oregon, to me, has all of the tools, but the Big Ten is a gauntlet. Do you think that gauntlet is what maybe trips up the Ducks or any of these other Pac-12 schools that are entering into a very different landscape?
Yeah, I am down on both USC and UCLA, but both of the LA schools. I think UCLA is headed towards a really bad season, and I don't think SC has the talent level that people think that they have now that Caleb's departed. The difference with Oregon is they've beaten these Big Ten teams in the past. They've beaten Ohio State and Columbus, and even going back, they've beaten Wisconsin. They've gone to play maybe Michigan State. They've gone to these teams and either won or lost maybe a close game. And the way Dan Lanning has built this team, he's built them like an SEC program. They've got one of the deeper NIL budgets in the country to be able to get whomever they want. And they have a very difficult home, very difficult place for opponents to go play. They have one of the better home field advantages in the country. I don't think this Big Ten gauntlet is going to trip up Oregon at all. I think it was funny. I think the answer to the question, like I posed this to someone the other day, like if Ohio State or Georgia do not win the national championship, who would it be? And Oregon was like the immediate answer.
Yeah, Oregon makes a lot of sense to me. Go ahead, Kel.
No, I have not heard that, I feel like, from anybody else. That's interesting.
They're the fourth favorite on the board right now. I heard some buzz for Ole Miss. I don't know if you have any thoughts about their roster heading into the year. We know Lane Kiffin can coach. The roster's good, but I think they're one of those teams that's just super volatile, upside down.
I was going to say, they always seem to have one of those games, and I love Lane, and I'm so happy that he's done well now. I think he took a little bit of a bad rap and some heat for a while, and with some of the off the field stuff, but he has proven that he can coach. And again, they brought some guys in. They lost Judkins to Ohio State, which is a big deal, but they still have a lot of talent. I just wonder though. I still think that they're a team where, like you said, one week they'll find themselves in a game with someone that they probably shouldn't. And I'm not sure that they're quite up to the beating Georgia level yet.
I agree. Chris Felica, enjoy the season. Good luck.
I will.
Enjoy the rest of your time in Vegas. We appreciate it.
I will. Going to have to take a walk behind us right now and make some wagers.
That's the beauty of this show, is we do some television, you make some wagers.
Chris is winning the
Open.
That's
the way it works. Oh, that's a good question.
Xander or Oberg? Those are the two that I've landed on.
Like Oberg, top debutant at 2-1 is a bet I got to make. I love it. Great stuff. We'll talk to some DraftKings people on the other side. A little NBA. Stay with us here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, let's wrap up the show. Jared Smith, Kelly Bidlin here, downtown Las Vegas, hanging out at the D. This is a numbers game. And joining us now, back-to-back again, Kelly Bidlin deserves the MVP trophy today for booking such a fantastic show. We go from Chris Felica to Amin El Hassan, host of the Oddball podcast on the DraftKings Network. We go from college football to the NBA. Amin, it's great to have you here, pal. You're in town for Summer League. It's been an exciting time. Of course, the NBA kind of resets their fiscal year this week as we get into a new season. Before we get to some of the big picture stuff, your overall takeaways from Summer League, is there anything that you can kind of draw as like, hey, I'm watching this kid or I'm watching this team and I'm really excited to look at them going into the year?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you look at Summer League, really 90% of it is this is our winter meetings, right? Sure. It's a convention. Everybody's here. And the other thing is everybody's in a good mood. Everyone always feels like, hey, we had a great offseason. We drafted a kid we really like. We signed someone. We traded for someone. We hired a new coach that we really like. And so it was a lot more open, a lot more giving and talking. Obviously, Las Vegas is a fun place to be. A lot of great restaurants and things to get into. So that's the value of this thing. It's the convention aspect of it. But then when you look at the games, you look at the players out there. I was asked this question yesterday. I said, you know, it's not necessarily like what your stats were or did you win all your games or not. I want to see, do you know how to play? Right?
Yeah.
Are you doing the right things? Maybe not getting the right results in the moment, but are you playing the right way? And then if not, or if adversity hits, how are you responding to all that? And that's the thing you look at. So a great example of this, I could say, is that I don't think Kristaps Porzingis had a great summer league when he came over.
Sure.
But I remember watching him and said, you know what? He's playing with a bunch of guards who aren't going to be in the NBA the next year. These guys are all just trying to make a name for themselves, dribbling the air out of the ball and shooting every time because they think that's what's going to get them noticed. And this kid is setting the screen right every single time. He's not getting discouraged. A lot of times bigs will do it 2-3 times. Like, they're never looking for me. Why am I even doing this right? So that always stood out to me when I watched him. And every year there's someone you watch and you say, okay, like, I noticed this about you. And I think those are the things that you can project. But at the end of the day, this is the best analogy I can give you. Like, summer league is like freshman orientation going to college.
Okay.
Is that college? No.
Oh.
Could you show up to freshman orientation bright and early with your pencil sharpened and taking notes and be a terrible college student? Yes. Could you also show up?
Sounds like me.
Could you also show up drunk, out of your mind, throwing up in the middle of the orientation session and making a fool of yourself and still end up being a pretty good college student? Also,
yeah,
that could happen. So it can tell us right now where you're at. But it's not going to tell us where you're going to be 10 years from now or even 5 years from now.
Yeah, I think fundamentals. Do you have the fundamentals to play? Do you have the mindset to come in and work hard? And the rest takes care of itself. You've got to be in a good situation. You've got to play for a team that can put you in the best chance to succeed. And that brings us to a player that I think it not only has been playing here in Summer League, but also is kind of been questioned in that regard, and that's Bronny James. And I don't want to make this a hot take. I don't want to make this a controversial thing. When you watch him, do you get those same vibes? Fundamentals, yes, but maybe just needs time to develop.
Yeah, I mean, this is the weird thing. So a lot of times when we talk about guys, top 7 pick, top 10 pick. And so we are searching for those positives because, like, hey, it was top 10 for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, just give it time or whatever.
Right.
This kid's the 55th pick. So I thought we all knew he's not going to be NBA ready this year. The Lakers said it. J.J. Redick said he's a development project. He's a developmental project. So when he comes here and everyone's kind of harshly judging him like he's supposed to be ready to play right now, I said, no one ever said that. Maybe his dad said it. But other than that, everyone else involved in his like career has said this is a work in progress. And so, you know, he went out there. He did not shoot well. He did not make good decisions. He turned it over a lot. But I never saw him frustrated once. I never saw him lash out. I never saw him kind of like be a bad teammate. And are those things alone going to carry him to a great NBA career? No, but as long as he's got the work ethic and the opportunity to be developed, and that doesn't mean minutes at the NBA level, but like just working with the coaches, I think in like 2 or 3 years, he can be a solid NBA role player.
Do you think we will see the Lakers force him into action at some point?
That was going to be my next question.
I think from the basketball standpoint, the realistic expectation should be a couple years, right? I mean,
yes. So I would say preseason for sure.
Sure,
he'll get some time out there, especially like in the second half where everyone's like, "What are we doing?
Right.
Why are we playing our guys?" I think he's going to start the year down in the G League, I mean, he might start on the roster and never play, but right. then whenever G League starts, he's going to go there. He's going to be there the whole year. And I think at some point at the end of the year, depending on like what's happening in the Lakers season, he gets the call up and maybe you get a game in with your dad.
Gotcha. Yeah.
That's the voice of Amin El-Hassan, host of the Oddball podcast on the DraftKings Network. Excited to talk a little NBA. All right, so I'll throw some of these random Bronny props at you.
Okay.
And you tell me if this has any – there's really only two of them I'm interested in, and they're okay. posted on DraftKings right now. They're both around even odds. So, again, they're kind of coin flip bets. Do we think he's going to score 15 points or more in any game this year?
No.
I agree.
Is there a no option on any of these?
No, that's why I'm not. That's why I'm not betting these. The one that does intrigue me, and this one's priced a little bit more aggressively. This one's plus 120. Him to make three threes in a game this year.
I mean, if he made three threes, he's gonna score 15 points.
Exactly.
In that game.
So that's why I wouldn't bet the 15 points, which is minus 110. I would go to the three threes because you're right. If he makes three threes in a game, odds are he's gonna get to 15 points.
Right.
That one feels a little bit more palatable because three shots, right?
Yeah.
Like it's random. Like he could have a game where, you know, they're down by 40 to the Mavericks in like March and they throw him in there and just give him some run.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially like, you know, early in his career, his opportunities to score are going to come from one of two things. Transition.
Sure.
Or I was sitting there in the corner waiting and someone could, and my feet are set, my eyes are wide open and my heart is clear, whatever, you know? So I guess that could happen. Definitely, to me, in my mind, more likely than 15 points.
No like reason it. To bet him now, though, because as Amin's talking, like the whole idea is it's going to be, if we see him at
if
all, it's going to be later in the season.
In
wait till he actually gets called up. Then you can bet props then.
And decent chance that if he starts the season in the G League, these numbers decrease and you can get a better price down the road. All right, speaking of prices that were changing, Philly's price was the biggest mover in the offseason. Of course, the Paul George move basically has them on par right now with some of the other top teams in the Eastern Conference. I think the biggest question I've heard some back and forth, Knicks, Sixers. I think those are the two, right, the next teams behind Boston. Even with the deal for Paul George, do you think that did enough to put the Sixers in front of the Knicks? Or do you think what the Knicks did last year and getting Brunson back on that reduced contract, some more flexibility? I know they lost Isaiah Hartenstein. Which one of those two teams do you prefer?
So the win totals came out. DraftKings put out the win totals. Knicks were at 52.5, I believe, and Sixers at 51.5.
Yep, we got them on the screen right now. Basically right neck and neck.
Right. I believe the delta there is about people's lack of confidence in the health of Joel Embiid, and to a lesser extent, the health of Paul George, who hasn't been exactly Iron Man either. Mm-hmm. I think that's all being represented right there. On paper, the Sixers are a more talented team. They just are. Joel Embiid is MVP of the league, where he was a year ago.
He could be.
And it could be again.
Yeah.
Jalen Brunson to be MVP, would, even as great as he played this last year, still is kind of like, all right, you guys need to win 60 games. And it's a lot of caveats to get him to MVP caliber, whereas Embiid is like legitimately, I'm one of the five best players in the NBA. I'm on the MVP ballot every single season, right? Paul George, again, a 3-and-D guy extraordinaire, can create. And then their other offseason moves that they did, adding Caleb Martin.
Yeah.
A young vet who's played deep in the playoffs, played in the NBA Finals, had a hell of a Game 7 against Boston a year ago. You add Andre Drummond, who at this point, serviceable backup center. Even a guy like, Eric Gordon.
Yeah.
Can come in off the bench, give you some scoring pop. I like how Daryl Morey rounded out this roster with guys that are experienced but can still have some productivity. To me, I think the Sixers, I mean, it feels like a good bet, but the reason why it is because they know Joel Embiid gets hurt and this whole math changes.
As far as the injuries go, I mean, is it too much pressure on Jalen Brunson this year? I just look at that team. I love the makeup and what we saw in the postseason, but man, it's going to require consistent scoring at a high level from Jalen Brunson, it feels like to me.
So in a weird way, the Knicks have kind of the same conversation, albeit not with their best player, right?
Yeah.
With Philly, it's your best player. With the Knicks, it's like, OG Anunoby, is he going to stay healthy? Is Josh Hart not going to fall apart? Is Julius Randle going to be healthy? And those are the kind of things right there. I think Mikal Bridges really adds another dimension to them. But the Knicks are always going to have to be the overachieving team because talent-wise, they're not more talented than Boston, and they're not more talented than the Sixers. And I'll argue, they're not even more talented than the Bucks.
Right.
That one's a debate, especially because we didn't see Dame's best stuff last year, and we didn't see really that team come together at all. And I think they have a lot of growing to do as well. Definitely does not have a lot of growing to do. Amino Hassan of the Oddball Podcast on the DraftKings Network. Go check it out. Enjoy the time in Vegas, pal.
Absolutely. My flight's in a couple hours. I'm out of here.
Summer League has that way of creeping up on you. All of a sudden, now it's football season as the NBA says farewell to their Summer League fun. Great stuff. Awesome show. Sia Najad came on. Will Hill, Chris Felica, Larry, Matt, and Sean in the back. Kelly Bidlin, I'm Jared Smith. This is a numbers game on VSiN. Stay with us.